You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, December 5th, 2016.
You are not going to involve the people that this affects the most at the end of this process.
A group called the Equity Collective staged a protest at this weekend's community conversation on downtown safety and civility. More on that coming up in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we report on a local project to provide free legal services. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
The Sycamore Land Trust has opened a new nature preserve on the shores of Lake Monroe. The Amy Weingartner Brannigan Peninsula Preserve, which covers 48 acres, was acquired in 2015. The land was purchased with funds donated by several members of the Weingartner family in memory of their daughter, Amy, who died of brain cancer in 2012. Additional funding was provided by Monroe County, the Bicentennial Nature Trust, the Bloomington Community Foundation, and other members of the Sycamore Land Trust. Volunteers from the Hoosier Hikers Council helped with trail construction. Sycamore Land Trust Communications Director Abby Perfetti says the new preserve is host to a menagerie of wildlife and panoramic views of Lake Monroe.
Just a beautiful property. It's hilly, it's got hardwood forests, it's a great stop for migratory birds and turtles and lots of wildlife that depend on Lake Monroe. And it's also really nice. It's got a two-mile hiking trail that just offers beautiful views. I can't say enough about how glorious the views are because since it's a peninsula, you can see the lake on both sides of you. It's wonderful. I was just there yesterday and saw a bald eagle flying around the treetops, so that was really satisfying. But there are hawks and other kinds of raptors there. There are turtles that I've seen nesting there or, I guess, running around the shoreline there. I think the biggest chunk of wildlife that you'll see is birds. There's tons of migratory birds. It's a great stop for birds as they migrate or just if they want to winter there.
The land formerly belonged to Indiana University Alumni Association before being sold to a residential developer in 2003. The actual shoreline of the peninsula is owned and managed by the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. Perfetti emphasized that the preserve is free for the public to access, but it does border some residential properties that visitors should be aware of.
It's really important for us, for people to know that it's totally free to visit. And we want people to be respectful of our neighbors there because it is residential. You know, we ask that people don't park on the street. They just park in the parking lot. Don't trespass on other people's property. The trail makes it really clear what you can actually walk along. And we have signs that posted to show where the property lines are. So it should be pretty easy, but it's just a really beautiful hike. I think it offers some pretty unique views in Monroe County of the lake and of treetops. And this is a great time of year to go because it's winter, so you can see lots of birds flying around. I can't tell you how many different woodpeckers and hawks and, of course, the eagle that I saw yesterday on my hike. So it's just a really special place.
The preserve can be found on Rush Ridge Road, which intersects State Road 446, just north of the causeway over Lake Monroe, and is about 20 minutes from downtown Bloomington.
Activists in Standing Rock, North Dakota, are warning that the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline is not over, despite an easement denial from the Army Corps of Engineers. The Corps announced yesterday it would deny a permit to drill beneath Lake Oahe, where the pipeline is currently scheduled to run. Bloomington resident Mark Haggerty, a veteran who has traveled to Standing Rock to protest the pipeline, says the mood there was jubilant yesterday as news spread about the permit denial. But he says there is also concern among demonstrators.
We saw the response from the different people involved in the corporations and how they're just going to keep drilling and nothing has changed as far as we can tell. And so the Indians up here are concerned that white people will leave and leave them vulnerable to the police again.
Haggerty called WFHB from a community center on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Shortly after the Army Corps' announcement, the companies developing the pipeline issued a statement reiterating their commitment to finishing the project. Sunoco Logistics and Energy Transfer Partners stated they, quote, fully expect to complete construction of the pipeline without any additional rerouting in and around Lake Oahe, unquote. President-elect Donald Trump, who owns stock in Energy Transfer Partners, has voiced support for the pipeline project, and it is possible his administration could reverse the Army Corps' decision next year. The Sacred Stone Camp, where many of the demonstrators have been camping, issued a statement that, quote, the fight is not over, and urging people around the country to hold solidarity actions, unquote. In Bloomington, a local group affiliated with 350.org is organizing actions every day of December at noon on the courthouse square.
Monroe County experienced strong voter turnout in the November general election, according to Clerk Nicole Brown. Brown gave a post-election report at the December 1st meeting of the Monroe County Election Board.
I am very pleased to report that the number of registered voters in Monroe County at the close of registration for this election was 112,216. That's an exciting number. The number of voters who voted in person at the polls was 28,894. The number of all voters who voted absentee, 30,953. So the total number of voters who voted in this election was 59,847.
Brown said the number of provisional ballots totaled 167, of which only 29 were counted. Board Chair Carolyn Vanderweel provided more details of the provisional ballot count.
We did have 167 provisional ballots and one questionable ballot that we've talked about. Of the 167, there were 47 people not registered to vote in Indiana, 62 who were registered to vote in Indiana but not in Monroe County, one person who voted who was actually registered to vote after the October 11th deadline. There were 13 people who were not on the poll list, and there are a variety of reasons why that might happen, one of which is that people who register late but vote early might not have gone through the SVRS system, even though we can look them up and see that they're registered to vote. That's probably the biggest reason that we have for those, but there are sometimes other reasons.
Vanderweel went on to say the deadline for campaign finance reports is coming up in January.
I would remind everybody that even if you did not run for election this year, but you still have an open campaign account, you do need to file that report. You will get a reminder from us to tell you that that is due. So consider that as something valid. If you do have a question, like you think you closed your account, but you didn't, whatever, give Election Central a call. We can get those matters worked out.
Board member William Ellis added there would be strict consequences for those with repeat late filings. Ellis went on to complain that paychecks for election workers had been processed and mailed late and said it was embarrassing to have employees who don't get paid on time.
In 2018, we have to stick the landing with this, and I'm hoping we have serious discussions with the auditor to let her know that this is not going to be acceptable, because I don't want there's no way we can tell employees it's not going to happen again, because this is three out of three times now. Every election's had a problem this year with payroll. The expectation is going to be there's problems, but hopefully we can overcome that and in 2018 surprise them and get it right.
In discussing the board's January meeting, Vanderweel said the board will be reviewing election-related issues, poll worker surveys, and the possibility of rank choice voting. The next meeting of the election board will be held January 5th from 1 to 5 p.m.
The Bloomington Commission on the Status of Women released a call for nominees for their 2017 Woman of the Year, Emerging Leader, and Lifetime Contribution Awards. The Woman of the Year Award is for a woman who has improved the quality of life for other women and serves as a role model for women by her outstanding contributions to the community. The Lifetime Contribution Award honors someone whose work advanced the status of women through leadership and service. And the Emerging Leader Award acknowledges a woman with less than 5 years of significant achievements that indicate the potential for future contributions. More information about nominations can be found at bloomington.in.gov/CSW. The submission deadline is January 23, 2017. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. In August, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton announced an initiative to address complaints and issues surrounding safety and civility in downtown Bloomington. The initiative stems from complaints about aggressive panhandlers and behavioral problems from some persons with mental health and drug abuse issues. The mayor also said some parks employees didn't feel safe working in downtown parks and cited public health concerns over discarded hypodermic needles in those parks. As part of a response, the city contracted with the Community and Justice Mediation Center, or CJAM, to establish the Downtown Safety and Civility Dialogue and Deliberation Project. As part of the project, a community conversation about downtown safety and civility was held this past weekend at City Hall. Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn attended the event.
The attempts by the Community Justice and Mediation Center, or CJAM, to conduct a public hearing on the Downtown Safety and Civility Initiative on Saturday were temporarily disrupted by protesters who took issue with the process and those involved. About 15 minutes into opening comments, Nikki Borowski, co-owner of the Backdoor Nightclub, stood up to lead a group called the Equity Collective in reading a statement of protest. Interrupting the speaker, the group complained some individuals who were homeless and living in poverty wanted to be part of the discussion but were not able to attend because there wasn't enough advance notice given. Here's an excerpt of the interaction between Borowski and one of the event's organizers, Lisa Marie Napoli.
We are given 48 hours and zero information, but we are dealing with people's futures. We deserve more than 48 hours and zero information.
I apologize that the press release got out later than we expected. I apologize about that.
I don't care about your apology. What I care about is reading what I have to say.
Borowski claimed the group represents, quote, business owners, students, and members of the working class whose living experiences are situated within the scope of the discussion, unquote. The group went on to read a two-page statement leveraging a number of complaints, including the accusation the initiative has ignored the root causes of poverty, addiction, and homelessness. Borowski also complained not enough members of these disenfranchised groups were given a voice in the process. Napoli offered to arrange a follow-up session.
Absolutely not. You are not going to involve the people that this affects the most at the end of this process. While attempts were made to engage some of our most vulnerable community members, 19 was the count that was given this morning, their input was trivialized when actual decision-making power was handed over to the current task force.
Many attendees left the room, but about 40 people stayed to hear the protesters' statements.
We demand that this meeting be adjourned immediately and rescheduled for a later date, and that at least 2 weeks' notice, as well as ample publicity, be given in order to allow members of the public to arrange to attend and to prepare. Publicity necessarily includes outreach to affected populations via media that they regularly access. We hold that any conversation about community safety, civility, and justice will necessarily center the needs and well-being of those in the community who are most vulnerable.
Borowski goes on to assert the task force created by the city will not be able to see beyond its own interests.
We assert that the task force is neither representative of the larger Bloomington community, nor is it objective. As a body, the task force has a vested interest in maintaining control and further gentrifying downtown Bloomington. The overwhelming majority of individuals named in the task force and its staff, among them a business attorney, your chair, a business promoter, a real estate banker, a land developer, and the chief of police all stand to gain financially from the prospect of increased policing. We find it highly unlikely that a median income of the task force members is anywhere near Bloomington's median income of $28,000, or that a single member is among the 39%, whopping 39% of Bloomington residents who live below the poverty level, which is currently defined as $11,770 for an individual. Unlike so many Bloomington residents, these members of the task force do not have to navigate the complexities of poverty and socioeconomic insecurity in their daily lives.
Borowski and the Equity Collective voiced six demands in all, including that the task force be immediately dismantled. The collective wants to see a new, more diverse task force created that would have at least half its membership come from those who live daily with homelessness, poverty, mental health issues, and/or addiction. In its protest statement, the collective said some of the action ideas to be discussed on Saturday were, quote, deeply flawed and, quote, flagrantly discriminatory.
As it stands, this document is deeply flawed, and any discussion that springs from it as it is will serve only to normalize and legitimize any flagrantly discriminatory suggestions contained therein. We will strike from the document measures that are wholly unconscionable and for those that violate individuals' lawful rights.
Lisa Amsler, a steering committee member and IU SPIA professor, and Don Griffin, a local real estate agent who is a Safety and Civility Task Force member, each offered to meet with the collective on the spot in a separate space, but were rebuffed by Borowski. The public input sessions eventually got underway. It was the third stage of a three-stage process developed by CJAM called the Downtown Safety and Civility Dialogue and Deliberation Project. In a previous stage of the project, stakeholder groups or focus groups had developed a list of action ideas to address a broad range of issues, including housing, education, mental health, addiction and abuse, detox services, and policing. In this third stage, those same topics were up for examination by the broader community. The ideas of establishing a work release program and constructing a public bathroom downtown were also given time for discussion. Attendees on Saturday gathered in discussion circles and were tasked with honing the list of action ideas to the highest priorities. The resulting list of priorities will be forwarded to the Mayor's Safety and Civility Task Force. Liz Grenette, director of CJAM, spoke with me a few days after the event. Grenette said her organization is tasked with finding common ground and will remain neutral. Grenette reminded me that the list of action ideas were recommendations from 117 fellow citizens representing multiple stakeholder groups who had participated in the previous two stages of the process. Grenette said one of the groups was composed of 27 service providers that worked closely with the homeless community and those who have drug and mental health issues. Grenette said a social worker who formerly worked with Shalom Center had spent many hours liaising with that community to make sure their voices were represented in the process. Grenette said from her own perspective, to say those voices were not represented is to, quote, belittle or disregard those that were in attendance and who fully participated in the process we designed, unquote. At the end of the community discussion on Saturday, attendees were given a chance to make final comments. Some were encouraged by the community coming together to share ideas. Others expressed concern about the homeless population being referred to as a nuisance and said that a greater effort needs to be made to ensure more people from the street are receiving the services they need. Still others expressed doubt the initiative would actually lead to solutions. Their doubt was rooted in the fact that when the mayor announced the Downtown Safety and Civility Initiative in August, decisions had already been made to increase policing, to enforce panhandling laws more strictly, and to increase surveillance in public parks. In his closing statement, Mayor Hamilton indicated there could be another opportunity for public input in January of next year. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
A full list of the action ideas discussed at the meeting is available on our website, WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithfield Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithfield's home automation service is available at smithfieldsecurity.com.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at INSCCAP.org.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, I am Sarah Waters with the District 10 Pro Bono Project. District 10 Pro Bono Project is working to serve folks at the lowest socioeconomic level through connecting them with attorneys when otherwise they wouldn't be able to have access to that service. We work with about 9 counties right now. For every one attorney that's willing to do pro bono work, or just attorney in general in the state, there are 8,850 potential clients that desperately need services right now. And so in the face of that, we really are tapping all of our resources, trying to connect that huge number of people to attorneys is the main goal. So we do like an intake process, which means during our intake hours, which we hold 2 days a week, people can call in with whatever issue, mostly family law issues, a lot of domestic violence. That's our main heart, our main focus. We also do a lot with bankruptcy. So folks can call in, explain the situation, then we'll do a second interview. If we can't take the case, we will try to place them with someone in the community or surrounding communities that can. There are so many volunteer opportunities right now. We would really love to have support with general office tasks. We really need people to be filing. We really need people to be doing some of the intake. So that would be receiving calls, calling people back. Usually when I do an intake call, at least once a week, I have someone tell me that I have done something for them that they are so grateful for. And that's a weekly, it's just a normal thing because you are so intimately connecting with people in a way that a friend or a mentor or a therapist might not. We also are really needing some volunteers that could be grad students, undergraduates that that know they may want to study law or go into that field, retired folks that have a social service or any other legal background, also anyone with a paralegal background to do the on-the-ground intake. So that's dealing with the calls that are coming in and really doing like triage work. We also really actually have a lot of fun. It's pretty enjoyable environment to be in. There's stress in terms of the deadlines, but we are all very supportive of one another. Despite the just crazy stress at times, you know at the end of the day that it was something that made someone's life a little easier. Thanks for listening. This is Sarah with the District 10 Pro Bono Project.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with 3 ways to volunteer in the criminal justice and legal fields. District 10 Pro Bono is a nonprofit social service legal aid program serving low-income populations who could not otherwise obtain legal counsel. A part-time volunteer office assistant is needed to help with filing, shredding, data entry, and housekeeping duties for 2 to 8 hours weekly or biweekly. Can you share your skills with this nonprofit? New Leaf, New Life offers services to inmates in the Monroe County Jail during incarceration and after release. Front desk volunteers work 1 2-hour shift a week at their Transition Resource Center, greeting clients, answering phones, and providing resources as needed. And the Community Justice and Mediation Center offers a 40-hour training program for those interested in learning about conflict resolution, mediation, and restorative justice. At the end of this course, participants will be qualified to be a volunteer mediator with CJAM. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
This has been the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill, Joe Crawford, and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, our partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.